Good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network, and today is Monday, March 25th, 2013, and I am very pleased to be joined today by my guest, Harold Covington. Harold is the author of just a number of books, and you know, I've read, I'm going to say four, five, six of them by now, and I'm telling you, they're action, they're adventure, they're exciting, but they're also a template if anybody is clever enough to see what he's suggesting to do. With that being said, Harold, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
So anyway, where was I going to go with this? By the way, I wanted to ask you in your opinion on President Obama's speech today, where at the swearing-in ceremony for these new U.S. citizens that are just here, and how he wants to fast-track some kind of immigration reform act to help all of these downtrodden Mexicans who are here, all 50 million of them, become citizens.
Well, what he wants to do is get them on the voters' rolls, which is not quite the same thing. In essence, what the Democrats are doing is they are creating an artificial permanent majority, not only through legalizing the millions of illegals that are here in this country already, but through creating a kind of a permanent underclass of people who are dependent on government for, in essence, their subsistence. And every election from now on, we're going to hear the same thing that we've been hearing for the past few elections. Oh, these mean, evil Republicans are going to take away your EBT card, they're going to take away your Obama phone, and they're going to take away your health care, and blah, 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 blah. And as horrible as it is, I think, starting with about the 2016 election, the Democrats probably won't even have to use vote fraud anymore of the kind they've been using the past few times, because they'll have a majority. It's one that they've created themselves. But in essence, normal people, white people, are going to be outnumbered at the polls before they're outnumbered statistically or census-wise.
Well, there's something to be said about that. And one of the things, I was in my, in this, I can't call it a job because I don't get paid, but in my existence as a talk show radio host, I get to talk to all kinds of people. I get to talk to former FBI people, intelligence agents of various nations, including our own. And I happened to be talking to a former DEA type guy the other day. And one of the things that he said to me, he says, Mike, we can't deport these people. Because the U.S. citizens who are on that lower rung, who would take those low-paying jobs, low-skill jobs, low-education jobs, are so doped up and so high that American employers can't count on them to do the jobs that these illegal aliens are doing.
Mm-hmm. There's probably something to that. I don't know about them being doped up, but the simple fact is that most so-called normal Americans, white and black, I think, have simply gotten out of the habit of hauling their own garbage and picking their own lettuce and digging their own ditches and landscaping their own lawns and that sort of stuff. Mexicans especially have become kind of a convenience for the purpose of doing all the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do. For instance, how many white families these days live on farms, and how many young white people grow up with any knowledge of agricultural labor, never mind any desire to do it? We have simply lost a lot of not only the skills, but the motivation that our forefathers had to be born, go to school, and when you get out of school, you get a job doing something useful that will help you make a living. The ambition of your typical white boy today is he wants to create software for video games or do something in an air-conditioned cubicle like Dilbert. But the thing is, there are still many, many jobs in this society that can only be done, frankly, by a strong back or, more likely, by skilled hands. Things like, you know, being a carpenter, an electrician, a plumber, a mechanic. These are things that have to be done, but frankly, Americans, by which I mean white Americans, have become so spoiled and so lured into this delusional world of television and the internet that their ambition is to kind of get through life without actually doing any work.
Well, Harold, I think it's deeper than that. I think that our educational system has, I remember back when I was in high school, you had an academic track and you had a vocational track. And you could go take shop classes, you get to go take electrical classes, and you get to go take plumbing classes. And you could go do these things where you could gain a skill that would allow you entry into maybe a trade union or maybe some higher skilled type labor job. And there was nothing wrong with that. It was very good because not everybody is meant to go to college. And not everybody wants to go to college. I mean, some of these kids are just bored to tears and don't see any point in it at all. Yeah. And our whole education system, since it was nationalized and became, you know, the U.S. Department of Education, has been driving even those who are not suited for academic life into an academic track, into a liberal arts type of curriculum where they don't know how to balance a checkbook and they've gained no useful skills. They don't see the value in that. And we're trying to force feed or to funnel everybody into a four-year academic program at a college when we still have needs for people who know how to fix, you know, lawnmower engines and know how to fix car engines. Know how to weld, know how to plumb a house, know how to put electrical wiring into a building. We still have a huge need for that type of stuff, but nobody knows how to do it.
Well, the world only needs so many English literature majors and so many political science master's degree holders, and really only so many software designers and IT people. Yeah, it used to be back in the day that it was possible for a blue-collar individual who was willing to work to get a job in a factory or in working in a business or as a self-employed contractor, and he could actually make a decent living and marry and buy a home and raise a family and have his part of the American dream. Not everybody gets to wear a suit and tie, and in our generation, when we were born, I think we more or less, well, most people understood that. But yeah, you're right. It's gotten to the point where every white American family thinks, well, okay, we're going to have one child because that's all we can afford because mommy and daddy have to work, but that one child is going to go to college and get some academic degree that's going to prepare them either for a life in corporate America working in a cubicle or in the government. That seems to be the some total white ambition now, as far as we have any ambition anymore for our children or careers. You either go to work for a big multinational shuffling papers in an air-conditioned office, or you go to work for the government shuffling papers in an air-conditioned office. And so, meanwhile, we are bringing in all these foreigners to do the hard work in our society that has to be done. And it was inevitable that eventually these people would start demanding political and social rights and equality, et cetera. And I'm amazed, frankly, that the Republicans weren't able to pick up on what the Democrats have been doing for the past 40 years with this immigration thing. I mean, did it never occur to these idiots that one day the Democrats were going to be the ones to give all these illegals the vote and they were going to create this permanent majority?
Well, let me give you my take on that, Harold. And my take is that the Republicans represent big business, and big business likes cheap labor. And they were willing to make the Faustian bargain of selling themselves down the river in order to have access to cheap labor. And, you know, I look at the American worker, working class Americans, middle class down to lower working class, and the wage pressure that's on them, there's two sources. One of them is the outsourcing and offshoring of jobs all in China, and the other is this massive, massive influx of illegal aliens into the country. And so what do the lower classes who have the ability to, through hard work and perseverance, work up into the middle classes, how do they gain their economic mobility upward? I just don't see a way.
They don't have that opportunity anymore. The illegals have, in essence, shut them out. The only jobs available for young white people nowadays in most of flyover country America, in these small towns, what's left of them, is to go into the military because the illegals have simply taken all the jobs and the economy has wrecked everything else.
Okay, well, here's our first break coming up. We'll be right back with more from Harold Covington. Be right back in a moment, folks. Stick with us. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. And we're starting off the show talking about really the wage pressure that has been put on American workers, particularly white American workers, by both offshoring, just moving entire factories over to China and other places in Asia, and the flood, I mean, the unmitigated flood of illegal immigrants coming into this country.
Well, there was another aspect to this which started actually about 30, 40 years ago, Mike, and that is when the economic system, capitalist system, or however you want to put it, began, quote unquote, liberating women and bringing millions of women into the workforce. what this did was it created a labor surplus or an excess of labor, and that enabled the corporate world and employers in general, once again, to keep wages down. And then they essentially began the same thing by bringing in the illegals. And of course, the bringing in of the illegals was facilitated by this 1965 Emanuel Schiller-Teddy Kennedy Act, which in essence threw out the previous 80-some-odd years of immigration policy. Up until 65, there was a specific quota of people that the United States would admit as immigrants, and it had the admitted objective of maintaining the pre-1965 racial and ethnic balance in this country at what it more or less always was. In other words, immigration policy up to that time was deliberately designed to prevent what has happened, which is the United States getting flooded with illiterate, unskilled, unhygienic, and dangerous hordes of third worlders. Our ancestors realized the danger of opening our gates to the hordes of the third world, so to speak. Matter of fact, around 1890 and 1900, there were things like Chinese Exclusion Acts passed by Congress that not only prohibited the importation of more Chinese labor, which people on the West Coast were doing quite a bit, built railroads and whatnot, but also demanded and achieved some fairly serious mass deportation of Chinese back to China. Apparently, around 1895 or so, there were a lot of Chinese out here on the West Coast, and many of them were eventually rounded up and put back on the ships back to where they came from, because our ancestors understood the necessity of maintaining America as a white Christian country. And that's what we lost legally in 1965, and our immigration problems largely stem from that date.
Well, I agree. And I remember Howard Metzenbaum's comment that day when he got that passed was, let the floodgates open. And by golly, they have.
Yep.
And the question we have to ask ourselves is, we look at these policies that have been passed. I can name a dozen of them, whether it's NAFTA and GATT, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the Immigration Reform Act of 1965. Did these policies achieve their stated objectives, or did they fail? And this immigration policy has been an unmitigated failure. And then you combine that with the willful neglect to that southern border in Arizona, where I'm from. And I spent 2 years down there in Maricopa, Arizona, which is in the heart of the Vehicle Valley. It is drug traffic. It is human traffic central. It's where the intersection of the Interstate 10 and the Interstate 8 are at. And if you can get onto either one of those interstate highways from there, you're 22 hours to Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Well, you ask if some of these laws achieved their objective. I'd say yes, they did, but not their officially stated objective.
Right? Harold, that's the point. And that's what I'm glad you brought that up, because that is so much the point. The stated objectives, what were these things sold to the American people to do and to be? How are they marketed to the American citizens? And I'm telling you, these things have had sinister intent. All of them have had sinister intent to destroy this country. Mm-hmm. And you look at the Bernadette Dorns and the William Ayers of the world. These people are working on a 50-year plan to destroy this country and to destroy our race.
It's called the Gramscian Long March. It's named after an Italian communist named Gramsci, who advocated, instead of outright violent communist revolution, what he called the Long March through the institutions, through the schools, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I remember enough of 1965 to understand that in 1965, Americans, frankly, were pretty complacent. Vietnam hadn't really heated up yet. There was a little bit of, to-do about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but again, no one possibly could have predicted, based on the type of life we had back then, what would happen. And I think this 1965 immigration law was probably slipped by an apathetic American people. And if they could have known what this was going to do to their children and their grandchildren, they would have been horrified, and they would have done something to prevent it. But
Well, Harold, they piggybacked it on the back of the civil rights movement, is how it was. We don't need to have an all-white America. We need diversity. Well, I'm sorry. Diversity has been chemotherapy for this country. It kills you before the cancer kills you.
Yeah. Well, the forced diversity and getting rid of racism by getting rid of race, that sort of stuff, this all goes back to various communist game plans that were articulated in the 1920s and before. I used to have all this information at my fingertips, but I know that the forced mixture of the races and the elimination of America as a white Christian country has long been a goal.
Okay, well, we got our break coming up, so let's pick this up right on the other side, okay? This is our short bottom of the hour. I'll be right back.
Right.
Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network, and it's Monday, March 25th, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back to the show, and let's go back to this, because one thing that I've noticed, and people need to wake up to this, but there has been an asymmetrical war waged against these people since at least 1965, if not further back. Going back to Joe McCarthy, going back further than that, and you look at what happened in 65. You know, we had Kennedy assassinated in November of 63. 64, Johnson was putting his henchmen together. And in 65, they started wreaking havoc on really the foundations of American life, American culture, and the American people.
After Johnson got elected or reelected, of course, he came in as vice president. But, a lot of our problems today go back to Lyndon Baines Johnson, or Uncle Cornball, as my parents used to call him. Johnson was, you might say, the ultimate white race traitor. He was a total system politician down to his fingertips. He ran one of the most corrupt political machines in Texas when he was a congressman, and generally he was a complete total no-goodnik, and of course he was a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. A lot of people still don't quite internalize the fact that our worst enemies, more often than not, are our own people who have made a deliberate decision as to which side of their bread is buttered, and they sell out. I get a lot of people coming around the NF saying, well, it's the Jews do this, the Jews do that. And yeah, the Jews are definitely part of the problem, and no one would deny that. But the Jews and the lefties and the libs and the communists have done what they have done because we have let them, and because they have had the assistance, the active and voluntary and creative assistance of many, many people of our own race. In some cases, I think these race traders like Johnson do it for money and power. I think that was the case with him. But in many cases, we have actually been successfully turned on ourselves. Our children today are raised in this horrible counterculture where they are taught from birth to hate themselves, to hate their white skins, to hate their heritage, to honestly believe that white people are the cause of all the world's problems, and that sometimes this indoctrination sticks. And it's just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Some alien force comes into the body of a white boy or girl and just sort of snatches out their soul and fills it with this alien philosophy and this alien, you know, mindset. It's like the old Pogo cartoon. We have met the enemy and he is us. I am sometimes talking about what theoretically might happen if my novels here in the Northwest were ever come to fruition and we ever did have an NVA and we were in a phase of direct action and armed struggle and so forth. And I've said in my books and elsewhere that the tragedy of that situation, should it ever arise, is that, like the first time around in 1861, it will be mostly a civil war between white people caused by the presence of non-whites among us and by the behavior of our own government. And that's one of the reasons I really wish there was some other way, because if any type of armed struggle ever does take place in this country anywhere over gun confiscation or anything like that, I can tell you right now the vast majority of the casualties and the vast majority of the suffering will be borne by white people. See, but all of this stuff, all these bad things have happened because we let it happen. And frankly, at some point in time, the bill is going to come due for that.
Well, the question is, we let it happen, but none of us, myself included, and I consider myself to be somewhat awake, somewhat aware these days. And these things never felt right to me. you know, as a young man, you know, a teen, early 20s, 30s, 40s, but I never knew what to do to try to stop it. Or how can you stop this juggernaut that the communists, with all their money, have put behind this thing?
Some people
Just one comment before I let you go.
Sure.
People have to realize that communism is Judaism. It is Talmudic Judaism to the core. Never, ever forget that.
Well, it's a Jewish creation from the bottom up, pretty much. But, yeah, we get a lot of people coming around with NF and the white nationalist movement who are like that ever since birth, ever since their childhood. They've always instinctively recognized that something was wrong. I mean, this Jewish indoctrination I refer to, this brainwashing, doesn't take on everybody. Some white kids, I don't know how it happens, they simply are born with good racial instincts, and they keep them throughout their lives. It's like people in the Middle Ages. Some people were naturally immune to the Black Death, and they could walk through the plague untouched. But unfortunately, with a lot of whites, it's not like that. The plague really does get them. And so this is something we have to factor into all of our calculations, and that is that a lot of our own worst enemies are our own people. Like, how many white people voted for Obama twice? You get those. I don't see how anybody could have voted for him even once, but it wasn't all election fraud.
But the thing is, you have to look at both sides of that equation. I mean, you look at John McCain, the only American senator who has a presidential pardon for treason against the United States. I mean, no one can claim McCain was ever a good choice for president. Then you look at Romney and his connections to his Cuban-Russian girlfriend, his connections to Cuba, and his ties to money laundering. I mean, Bain Capital was a money laundering, at least according to Gordon Duff and Veterans Today, Bain Capital was a money laundering mecca. And so we don't have a choice. We have, do you want, which poison do you want? Do you want the cyanide or do you want the arsenic?
Yeah.
They're both going to kill you.
This is one of the things that kind of confirms in my own mind this theory I've had that ever since the 92 election, at least, the two parties have had this agreement that each party will get 8 years in the White House. So that means, in essence, that for two elections in a row, each party must in turn throw the election. And so during those elections, the party that's scheduled to lose that year puts up the worst, most idiotic doofus they could find. I mean, look at this. In 96, the Republicans put up Mr. Baker the Undertaker, Bob Dole. 2000 was strange. They put up Al Gore, and apparently Gore didn't feel like losing. You know, they remember all that stuff that went on in 2000, but the fact is Bush ended up as president, appointed by the Supreme Court, not elected, which is not supposed to happen, so there was a glitch there. But then in 2004, they put up Kerry, who had so many flaws and had lied about his Vietnam record, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, in 2008, McCain. 2012, why in God's name the Republicans put up Romney, the absolute, I mean, I'm not a conservative, but I mean, even I could tell that if you're a good white conservative American, there were at least two other candidates in there that would have been much, much more appealing. And I think, you know, Limbaugh has a little bit of a point there, is that part of the reason that the Republicans lost 2012 was that ordinary white voters, conservative people who wanted a good, proper American president in there, just stayed home because when it finally came down to it, they knew Obama was bad, but they just couldn't stomach going into that voting booth and pulling that lever for Romney because Romney was such a lousy candidate and so completely unrepresentative of everything they really believed in. They just couldn't hold their nose and bring themselves to vote for Romney. So that was part of it, plus the fraud in Pennsylvania and Ohio. But we have to break out of this dichotomy. But I hear the music coming.
Okay, well, Harold, we'll be right back in a couple minutes. Just stick with us, folks. Be right back. More with Harold Covington. Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. And go ahead and finish your point that we had to cut you off because of the break.
Well, this two-party system we've got is poisonous, and it has been for a century. Like you say, it's a choice of what type of toxic waste you want in your body. In essence, for example, on immigration, Republicans want the illegals here for their labor. Democrats want the illegals here for their votes, but either way, they're going to be here. This is why there has never been any really serious effort to deport these people, despite the fact that we have literally millions of them breaking the law every day they breathe our air, because both of the major parties want them here. And, of course, Obama has now dropped all pretense. He's ordered the ICE to stop deporting illegals, and now he's releasing those who have criminal records. And it's just insane. But the problem is the virtual impossibility of normal people recovering any influence or any say-so in their own lives through the two-party system. Every now and then you get some guy that wants to, or acts like he wants to start a third party. Last serious effort on that was Ross Perot in 92, and I think he got, 10, 11% of the vote, something like that. And he was a millionaire, so he could finance his own campaign. But the requirements of money and media access that exist in our society make it essentially impossible for ordinary white people or anyone to seriously participate in the political process unless you get involved with one of the two parties and you sell your soul.
Well, Harold, I want to direct you to something. There's a group out there called movetoamend.org. And what this group does is they want to take corporations and not allow them to behave as persons. And they agree that money is not speech. So it is really, they want to put a constitutional amendment in place that will not allow corporations to have personhood per the Roberts Supreme Court. And money is not speech, and it cannot be used as such. Therefore, it can be regulated and level the playing field, at least as far as the money pouring into these obscene political campaigns.
Well, I would be in favor of that if most of these efforts to get rid of Citizens United were not basically run by the Democrat Party, who doesn't like the edge that they've lost in campaign fundraising. Now, again, we have this either-or choice. If you want to reform one of the bad things that one party is doing, it gets co-opted by the other. A good example was the Tea Party of a few years ago. In my personal opinion, what's left of the Tea Party has been basically co-opted by the Republican Party and drawn into their scene, and the left did the same thing with the Occupy Wall Street crowd.
Well, absolutely. The Koch brothers hijacked the Tea Party, and whenever you see things like Tea Party Express, and it's a trademark name, and that name is now owned by someone, and all the money pouring into it, I mean, they had a parade and they threw Sarah Palin in front of it to make her the Tea Party queen. She had nothing to do with it. That was originally a Ron Paul libertarian issue. And these guys with so much money buy everything. And so how do you get a grassroots movement of the grassroots without having the big money boys come in and try to buy it up?
Well, this is where my novels come in and some of the things I've been talking about on my own program, Radio Free Northwest. I've said on this show before, and I'll say again, at some point in time, this house of cards is going to collapse because the system is simply going to run out of money. A lot of people have wondered what will be the big event that sends the balloon going up, as right-wingers used to say. It could be a big cataclysmic occurrence of some kind, such as a Jewish attack on Iran, closing off one-third of the West's imported oil. Or it could be just plain runaway inflation. And as Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve just prints trillions and quadrillions of dollars hand over fist. But at some point in time, the various entities in America simply are going to run out of money, and they're not going to be able to continue to buy votes, to buy, you know, armed support from their mercenaries, or keep the mob pacified with bread in the circuses. We're starting to see this happening finally. For example, Detroit is now under state financial management because the black government in Detroit was just simply so totally incompetent that they made such a dog's dinner of it that the pretense could no longer be maintained, and they had to be, in essence, placed under financial supervision. This is going to be happening in a number of other places around the country. I want to see the state of California go down, because at some point, I don't know how California stays afloat at all, because their tax base is just fleeing the state, meaning they're white people. Businesses are fleeing the state. Neighboring states like Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon have little sort of chamber of commerce departments dedicated to recruiting the remaining white business in California, saying, hey, come here, set up here. You know, we don't tax the bejesus out of you, and we'll actually let you make a living. But so California's got to be the next one to go, but Illinois and New York won't be too far behind. And then, of course, the federal government itself. You just can't keep on spending more than you take in year after year after year after year. It just, I don't know why these people can't see that, but I think that's going to be what finally kicks over the two-party apple cart. Is
well Harold,
both sides are just going to run out of money.
There were two communist professors. I forget where they taught at, but it was Clower Previn. That was their whole issue, was to collapse the illusion of a free market system here in this country by overburdening it, getting it so far in debt, making it so it can't function. What I think is going to send the balloon up really is, I look at what's going on in Cyprus. I look at what happened in Spain and Greece. I look at the Arab Spring last year. And I think what's going to really collapse the system is going to be a bank holiday. I think that the banks are going to have runs on them. And I think that when they close for 2 weeks, they're never going to open again. That's what I think. And I think that we're going to have our hands full in this country, because if your EBT card doesn't work, or your debit card, or you can't get money out of the bank, and you're stuck with the gas you have in your tank and the food you have in your refrigerator, what are you going to do?
The thing that's going on in Cyprus is very interesting, because for the first time, a government is just plain walking in and robbing banks. They're stealing people's savings. They're saying, hey, you got money. Give it to me. We're going to take it. But that's going to happen here. It's already starting to happen here. There are noises being made by the Obama administration that what they want to do is buy out, quote-unquote, people's 401ks. In essence, you give us your 401k and we'll be nice to you and we'll give you 70 cents on the dollar for it, or some such BS, but they are already starting to eye people's private savings, because middle-aged and elderly white people, frankly, are the only people in this country that have any private wealth left to take. They're going to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs.
I mean, let me point one other thing out to you. Remember when Gabby Giffords was shot in the head?
Yeah.
And she lived. The judge who was with her, Judge John Roll, had about 90 days prior to his execution, had ruled that the federal government must keep their hands out of private retirement accounts. And that is the last nest egg left out there. That's it. There's nothing left. Country's
I've
broke.
Heard rumors to this effect that in that particular incident, Gabby Giffords was not the actual target.
No, she was not. It's my theory that it was Judge John Roll who was the actual target. And I also believe that this was done not by Jason Loeffner or Jared Loeffner, but by a three-man hit team who was sent there with the specific task of shooting as many people as possible and killing Judge Roll. He was the target. Now, he was also the judge that ruled in favor of Sheriff Richard Mack on the Second Amendment issue. This was a good American judge. This was an upright guy. And they wanted him eliminated. And by golly, he's gone.
Maybe it's the same crowd that keeps mysteriously showing up at elementary schools and then killing a bunch of kids right when gun control legislation is pending.
I don't know if you saw my interview on Press TV about that, but we pretty much confirmed that that was a three-man Israeli hit team. The Russian satellite, which is stationed over Groton, Connecticut, where nuclear submarine base is, has got Newtown in its field of view. And there are photographs of the three shooters entering the building. I've been told via a Russian source that they've been identified through facial recognition as Israelis.
One of these days, I think the world is going to realize, or somehow internalize, everything that Israel has done in the span of its existence, from the Holocaust hoax to the 9/11 thing to the various string of murders and tortures and kidnappings and every other damn thing they do. And I really hope that I live to see that day. I've lived to see communism, quote unquote, go down. I never thought that would happen. But I really hope that at some point and in some way I make it long enough on this earth to see Israel go down. I won't use the term that a certain British diplomat used, but it's a rotten little country.
It's a nest of vipers. It's a nest of vipers is what it is. And Harold, I hear our music. This is our long break coming up. We've got 7 minutes at the top of the hour. So if you need to go get a glass of water, cup of coffee, now's a good time to do it. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
More with Harold.
Okay, we'll do that.
Covington.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back. Mike was asleep at the wheel and left his microphone muted during the break. So that was Mike's faux pas. But today is March 25th, Monday. 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. And Harold, what I was saying into my muted microphone was that it seems the solution to our problem we have with our demographic changing in this country is to simply reinstate the immigration policies we had prior to 1965. They worked. They worked well. We had a wealthy, prosperous country. We didn't have all these third world immigrants here who can't read or write in their own language, don't have the IQ to get out of a paper bag. And why don't we just go back to that? What seems to be problematic with doing what we know has worked? We know it's a good system. We know it was a working system. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just go back to something that's a known good?
Well, the main problem there is that Pandora has already opened the box and the evil spirits have already escaped. Yeah, we could reinstate the pre-1965 laws tomorrow if we had a decent Congress and a decent president, which, of course, that's part of the problem right there. That ain't going to happen. But if we did, what do we do with the 30 or so million who are already here? Basically, the only real serious solution to our immigration problem would be a mass deportation on almost a biblical scale of all these millions of people that have no business here, who have come here illegally, basically to, in essence, steal from us, and they would have to be physically moved out of the country by plane or bus or train, however. And that right there involves problems that are, practically speaking, insoluble, because, in essence, the United States of America would have to apply heavy-duty military force in order to get these people out of here. And, we know that's just not going to happen. Whether we like it or not.
Harold, let me just say this, because these people didn't get here overnight. They didn't all come here in 30 days. They've been working on this and infiltrating, invading our country since Reagan passed the last amnesty. And now they're talking another amnesty. Mm-hmm. They've got 30 years to get in here. And I tell you, if I was president, I'd have them out of here within 12 months. So help me God, within 12 months, I would have every one of them out of here. And anybody who hired one of them, anybody who leased an apartment to one of them, anyone who transacted business with them at all, I would put them in jail for some reason. I would find a way to enforce laws. Arizona has a law on the books that's not very well enforced. But if you're an employer and you hire an illegal, and the key word in there is knowingly hire, so they all play dumb.
Right.
Well,
they
play dumb, but they know what fake IDs look like. They get their green card, their driver's license, their social security number. These employers know they're fake, and the way we know they're fake is because they may be withholding from the illegal alien, but they're not paying that money into the feds. They're not giving them the FICA. They're not giving them the federal income tax. They're not withholding it. They're pocketing it.
Which is illegal right there, and you'd think that they could be locked up for that.
Well, they have all their buddies to the Chamber of Commerce and all this kind of stuff, and they work the system. And it's a set of treasonous acts. And we as a people have to grow some cojones here, if you will. Forgive my Mexican, but we have to grow ourselves a pair and start not taking it anymore. Well, I talked to my friend Harry, he says we have to become more strident in our approach.
Well, if you read my novels, well, I know you have, then you know what I think the solution is. But the trouble is, let's assume that tomorrow morning we can achieve this great goal that all the right-wing and nationalist movements claim that they're after, and we succeed in making the white man in this country wake up, and all of a sudden the millions of white people who still do exist out there wake up one morning and they say, my God, we're getting screwed. We're getting screwed because we're white. Our government is against us. Our government is deliberately doing all these horrible things. We got to do something about it. Okay, what are they going to do? Because we have been completely and totally shut out of all access to the genuine levers of power. The military, I know we may have some disagreements on this, but I tell you right now, in certain branches of the military, it's mostly non-white. The officer corps in this country, I do not consider to be politically straight at all. Basically, they're time servers and bureaucrats and careerists, and they'll do whatever Obama tells them to do. It's been suggested in the past that there's a chance for some kind of military coup to finally clean out that cesspool in Washington. I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think the officer corps has the balls to do it. There's my solution, of course, which is separate or some form of separatism, which will result from a Soviet-style bust-up of the country. I think that's what's really going to happen. But one of the things I'm talking about when I discuss my Northwest plan is that no one else has a plan. The only real plan that I have heard that, in my view, might actually stand a chance to restore the United States as such from sea to shining sea if we could get millions of white people to actually do it, is the Eric Thompson plan, where we form, in essence, a white syndicalist labor union, White Workers of America, something like that, and enlist everybody in every workplace in this union, and in essence stage what amounts to a general strike, where all of the white people in the country suddenly withdraw their labor from the cubicles, from the laboratories, from everything that white men do to keep this country running. And we do. White people, especially white males, are still the guys that keep America moving. If we were suddenly to withdraw our labor and present a list of non-negotiable demands to the government of Washington, foremost among them being get these millions of illegals out of here now, it might have some effect. But I admit, Mike, I'm totally jaded and I'm totally pessimistic about this system ever recovering itself. It's not going to happen. There's going to be a Soviet-style breakup, and the country is going to break down into various geographic areas.
Let's talk about that. How do you envision the country breaking down, and along what lines? I mean, give me your best swag, which is your silly, wild-ass guess.
Well, I obviously believe that the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, needs to be the white man's slice of the pie. It has all that we need to create and maintain our own country here, including a couple of Canadian provinces. That needs to be all white. California and the Southwest is going to become part of Aztlan. That movement is already afoot. Effectively, the Beaners have already got it. They've already accomplished Aztlan, but through mass migration. And they've, in essence, pushed the white people out of the Southwest, out of California, out of large parts of Texas. I mean,
well,
so
well,
this
it's
is
not
actually
like that, but in Los Angeles County, the Mexicans are now ethnically cleansing the blacks out of their area.
Yeah. Aztlan, frankly, is at least half accomplished fact already. Now, as far as the rest of the country, New England will probably become sort of a liberal latte town. So I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but it's right up there in the northeastern seaboard where all the liberal and capitalist actual money is concentrated. There's another concentration down in Texas, of course, with the neocons and their energy combines down there. So New England will probably become some sort of liberal reservation where they barricade themselves in Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and upstate New York. The South will probably become some kind of Republic of New Africa. As much as I hate to say this, most of the white Southerners will have to probably flee and let the blacks and the Mexicans duke it out for the South. Flyover country will become a whole series of enclaves, mostly white, kind of a balkanized area. It could happen any number of ways, but that would be my
I want to comment on a couple things on that when we get back from the short break. Okay, we'll be right back. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. More with author Harold Covington. And buy his books because they're good. On the Jeff Rentz Radio Network, and today is Monday, March 25th, 2013. My guest today is author Harold Covington. And Harold, the way you describe the breakup, I'm most concerned about those people in Nebraska, Kansas, you know, the Midwest, the farm belt there, where we produce a lot of our food and grain. I'm really concerned about them. And I'm also concerned about people who would live in the South, white people who would live in the South, because if they get locked in, if they get landlocked and they're surrounded, if you leave blacks to themselves, it's going to be like Haiti. And that's all they can do. That is their epitome of civilization. That is as good as they can do on their own.
Well, thing is that once the iron heel of the federal government is removed from America and local people throughout America are empowered once again to settle their differences and order their affairs and govern themselves on a purely local basis without an army of FBI agents and U.S. Marshals descending on them to enforce diversity or to arrest them for hanging a monkey doll in a firehouse or something like that, then I think we would see some possible progress. Now, I could be somewhat wrong about the scenario I described. It could be that once the Iron Heel of Washington, D.C. is removed, white people could, in essence, establish their own enclaves throughout the country, including the areas like Nebraska and Iowa, which are still majority white. As a matter of fact, outside the top 100 major metropolitan areas in this country, the entire countryside of the United States is still majority white. We look at all these big, huge numbers of non-whites flooding in, and it looks really bad, and it is. But the fact is that most of the non-white population, for example, here in the Northwest, is concentrated in about three or four urban areas. So in a white countryside where whites would have access to things like agriculture and the ways to raise their own food, it would be possible, put it this way, for white people, if necessary, to revert to a much earlier and simpler way of life, as long as they live in the countryside, near the land, and they were, of course, free to rule themselves and order their own lives without the interference of this big, huge, monstrous government in D.C. There would probably be a lot of violence. It would be, in many respects, about like the Boer, the Afrikaner people who made their great trek up into the interior of Africa in order to get away from British-imposed diversity and freeing their slaves and whatnot. And it could be that there would be enclaves of white order where they had things like door plumbing and electricity and that sort of stuff. And outside the perimeter of these enclaves, there would be a kind of a Mad Max or Zulu-type world. You also got to bear in mind, especially in the South, you're going to have the blacks and the browns, the Mexicans, the Hispanics, duking it out over the resources. So in the South, it would be kind of a three-way tussle there. The various permutations that a breakdown of the United States could go through are almost endless. I personally would like to see some kind of order to it, as there was in the breakup of the Soviet Union, and I would personally like to see if we could actually salvage some of what we've achieved over the past few centuries. I mean, we may have fantasies about being Mad Max and riding up and down the highway, purple mohawks and shooting crossbows at each other, but nobody in his right mind really wants to live like that. Nobody really wants to go back to the Middle Ages or the pioneer days when you cut your finger, you could die of an infection. So I would like, if possible, to save something of white civilization and something of Western technology and some of the good things that we've done over the past few centuries. I don't really want to go back to total chaos, but that may happen. I have this horrible suspicion that the whole thing is kind of out of our hands because we're dealing with social and economic and historical forces here that are just bigger than everybody.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, sometimes you have to just learn how to surf. And really, I look at this, I think we're going to have things really get that bad. And let's say the power grid shuts down or because of a financial collapse, we can't transport fuel oil across the country so that, you know, people can't put gas in their cars. Trucks can't move. You can't get goods wherever they're going. So what you have is what you have. There's nothing else coming in. So you're going to have to learn how to build things. And I really think that we may end up in a situation where we have to go back and live a 1750s to 1790s type lifestyle. And I don't want to see that happen. I like our modern conveniences. I wish to preserve and protect them. I like being able to access the internet. I like getting into a car and being able to drive someplace to buy food off of a shelf. I like those things. But if this thing comes apart, and it may, I hate to say it, but it may. What do we do? What is our choice? Do we enter a new dark age for another 1,000 years?
Well, like, see, right now, for example, most of the world is living in a dark age. I mean, if you've ever been to Africa, they're living in the Stone Age in many cases. I think what would happen here if the Iron Heel ever lifted would be that there would be enclaves where you did have some of the conveniences like flush toilets and electrical power and maybe a limited form of the internet and TV broadcasting, and above all things like modern medicine and a transport system that was capable of moving goods and food and whatnot from one place to the other. But there would be sort of growing areas of chaos, Southern California being a good example. I mean, there's no way in hell that Southern California could survive without a modern infrastructure. What you'd have then would be millions of ravening, starving Mexicans. It'll be almost like the ancient migrations. There will be millions.
We got a break coming up. I got to put you on hold here. We got a break coming up. So we'll put you on hold for a minute, but I want to talk about this because Southern California has unique problems in the L.A. Basin I want to address. Be right back, folks.
Okay.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Lentz Radio Network. My guest today is author Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. And I hated to cut you off, but we were running into a commercial break. But the L.A. Basin is kind of unique because there's almost 30 million people who live there. And they've got a available water supply in the L.A. Basin for water for about 5 million people. And the rest, they import. They bring it from the mountains, and it goes in tunnels and aqueducts and, you know, all sorts of ways to move water there. Colorado River water goes in there. And without the power grid, L.A. Basin is going to get real dry real fast.
Mm-hmm. Are there any significant white elements left in Los Angeles and that area anymore other than movie stars and rich Jews and producers and whatnot? Because
well,
it seems
not really. It's mostly, well, you have the Hollywood area, but Orange County is where most of the white people have gone to.
Right. Okay. Well, I lived in San Antonio for a while, and we were having a problem there with the alleged drought, the aquifer being low, and the Brazos River running low. You couldn't go inner tubing down it anymore. But it came out, it wasn't so much the bad weather or the lack of rain that was causing the water shortages in San Antonio at that time. This was about, it was over 10 years ago. The fact that there were just so many illegal aliens in South Texas and the population had become so skewed that basically they were drinking it all. The result was that Southern Texas, they used to be able to grow certain crops like watermelons and whatnot, which they can't grow anymore because, in essence, millions and millions of Mexicans are drinking up all the water and lowering the water table and depleting the supply of fresh water to the point where it's actually changing the environment and changing the economy and everything else. And I'm sure this is happening in Los Angeles as well. Non-whites, third world illegal aliens, be they Somalis, be they blacks, be they Mexicans, be they Chinese, whatever, are like hordes of locusts. They descend on an area and they consume every available resource and they move on. And this is what I can foresee happening. We were talking earlier about the enclaves of white civilization that might still remain after some kind of central collapse. The problem with those enclaves would be almost like biblical migrations of huge numbers of non-whites, hundreds of thousands of them, millions of them at a time, walking across the land, devouring everything in their path and giving nothing back, and they would head for these white enclaves where they knew that there were still some resources and whatnot. This is why it's so pointless for white people in this country to pack up and move away from areas like Los Angeles or Detroit or whatever without some kind of political plan for establishing our own state and our own military. Because if you just run away and then find yourself a nice white area and say, oh, well, this is nice, they're just going to follow you.
All they do is follow you. It's like, you know, my dog doesn't want fleas and my dog doesn't want ticks. But if I take him out for a walk in the woods, he comes back with fleas and ticks. They go there because that's where the food is. And you know, they can't live without the host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Non-whites in this country are parasites. They come here for the express purpose of getting on the white man's back and riding. And if the white man tries to flee or bolt or get away from them, they will simply follow because parasites cannot live without a host. This is what I've said in the past, that assuming they succeed in their grand plan and they more or less exterminate all the white people in North America, the blacks and the browns, the Mexicans and the blacks, will fight over the ruins for a while with the booga, booga, booga and essays. And then what's going to happen is the Chinese will eventually come in and kill them all. So in a weird kind of way, if the blacks and the browns succeed in exterminating the whites, they're going to be exterminating themselves because Mexicans and blacks can't stand up to people like, say, the Chinese or the Japanese or even the Indians, people who actually have a culture and an organized society of their own. Blacks and Mexicans are kind of like the orphans of the world. They're almost cultureless. They're not very bright. They really don't have the type of moral and intellectual strength necessary to survive. The only reason they've survived in this country for as long as they have is that the white man and the white man's laws and the white man's technology has been protecting them. It's just like in Rhodesia when the white man first came in 1890, there were an estimated 500,000 Africans there in what later became Zimbabwe.
Well, there were
8 million of them because the white man's medicine and the white man's law and order had allowed these people to procreate and to multiply, and they could do so safely without their natural enemies killing them off. And this is what's happened in this country. And if you remove the white man, if you remove his order, his technology, his laws, his intelligence, his guiding strength from society, You see what happens in the Horn of Africa, in Rwanda and Burundi, and it's going to happen in this country. They can't survive without us. And if they do ever succeed in killing us off, it's going to be a mess.
Well, the thing of it is, Harold, you talk about Rhodesia and South Africa, and you have to realize that before white men were there, the only inhabitants were Bushmen and Hottentots, and they are racially very different from the majority Bantu types that live there now. The Bantus came
almost extinct. The Bushmen are almost extinct, and the Hottentots are extinct. The Bantu killed them off.
That's right. That's exactly right. And there was nobody there. The white men built this place, and then the blacks move in and have taken it over. And like you said, they've made a dog's dinner of it. Look at Zimbabwe today. The people are starving. The inflation rate, Mugabe is nothing but a communist thug. The same with the ANC in South Africa, communist thugs. And that's just how it is. Their self-governance is, they just go through the motions.
What you see in South Africa today, this is America in the very near future. The key event will have to be, though, the removal of that iron heel. Washington, D.C. and the federal government of the United States has to either go down or they have to lose all of their ability to control events, kind of like an old person getting senile and losing all their strength. And I'm still convinced this will happen, something to do with either the money or the energy supply. And of course, the two are interlinked. But either the central government is going to run out of money and they'll have to start printing it, and so you'll have massive hyperinflation, or else something will happen regarding energy, which will push gasoline up into some incredibly unattainable price. And since we, like idiots, have destroyed the rail system in this country, and we can't really move much of anything by rail anymore because we've allowed our railroads to atrophy and fall into disrepair, we won't be able to transport the basics of life like we have been, not to mention the fact that the highways are now falling to pieces because we haven't put any money in infrastructure for
generations. The I-5 through California going north and south, it's like a gravel road. It's coming apart.
I know people who drive that highway fairly regularly, and they say it's awful. It's once you get up into Oregon and on up to the Canadian border, it's not all that bad, but I've driven it before through Washington and Oregon, and even there, it's not what I remember, from 15, 16 years ago. And yeah, everything is deteriorating in this country. America no longer works, if you want to know the truth of it.
Okay, well, I hear a break music coming up right now. We'll be right back with Harold Covington for the final segment of the show. Stick with us, folks, to hear what else Harold has to say. Be right back. Monday, March 25th, 2013. I just want to give you guys a note for what's coming up programming-wise. Wednesday, I'm going to have guest Susan Lindauer going to talk about her ordeal and what happened to her after she tried to tell the world that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and the tough time she went through. And then Thursday, I'm going to have Jim Dean on, and he's going to be doing some talk about Israel and how they compromised our nuclear launch sequences and sold them to the Soviets. But that'll be on Wednesday and Thursday. But let's get back to Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Okay, always glad to be here, Mike.
Well, Harold, we've got about 8 minutes left. I'm gonna give this to you. What do you want to do? What do you want to talk about? Where do you want this to go? This is your time.
Well, naturally, I'd kind of want to put in a plug for my books and our website. For those of you who haven't heard me before, I'm with a group called the Northwest Front. We're headquartered in Seattle, Washington. We advocate the creation of a separate white homeland in the Pacific Northwest, a sovereign and independent nation that can serve as kind of a white Israel, if you will, and as a homeland for all of our people the world over. Our website is northwestfront.org. That's all one word, northwestfront.org. And we have a second site at Northwest Front, all one word, northwestfront.net, that you can look at. And I also do my own regular weekly podcast called Radio Free Northwest. So what I'd like, Mike, is for your listeners to come and check us out, because, you see, there is a solution to all this. I hear a lot of people in the white nationalist movement and on the Internet and various conservative groups and whatnot They send me these news stories about all the bad things that are going on, like the little white baby that was shot by blacks in his stroller and things like that. And they say, oh, Harold, look at this. Look at this. It's just so horrible. Oh, look what they're doing to us now. Oh, isn't it so horrible? Why doesn't somebody do something? And usually I keep my temper with these people and I try to explain to them that there is a solution. Sometimes I lose it and I'll just email them back and say, look, I've told you what you have to do. You know, I can't do it all for you. If you are still in any doubt, you know, I'm going to let me know. I will send you a copy of my book, The Brigade, that will tell you what to do about all this. I can't do it all myself, nor can anyone. A lot of people are concerned about these guys that freak out with guns in shopping malls, etc. And I tell anybody who cares to listen to me that this is not what we need. I actually do my best to stop frustrated, angry white men from flipping out like that.
And well, Harold, I think that's a setup. I think that, you know, nobody buys the lone nut shooter anymore, that there's too much coincidence on this. This is a template that's been used since JFK. And it's my premise that we have death squads operating in this country to create these incidents like Sandy Hook. You know, that's a prime example. The shooting of Gabby Giffords, another one. The Batman shooting in Aurora, Colorado, another one. There's death squads operating with impunity in this country.
Like Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, there's nothing coincidental in politics.
No, there's not. These are all setups. These are all staged, and they're merely being reported as lone nut gunmen. Yeah,
then again, it's possible for our people to be set up as patsies. I don't know if you heard about this incident with this prison head in Colorado being killed in his doorstep. And
yes.
I mentioned this on my own program, and this is before the other stuff happened. I said, I'll bet you are going to set up a fall guy, and it'll be a so-called white supremacist. And guess what? The very next morning after I'd uploaded that podcast, a so-called white supremacist is very conveniently gunned down in Texas. He's dead now, so nobody can ask him, you know, whether he was guilty or not. And so, yeah, these things are set up. But the thing I'm getting at is we will not be freed by individual action. We have to have a whole movement for white self-determination and white independence, and the only real solution is to get the Washington, D.C. monkey off our back. And like I said, if that iron heel is ever lifted, then it would be possible for whites in the states and in local areas to seize back control of their destiny. This is kind of what the Northwest Migration and the Northwest Imperative is all about. We do have a plan. We have things like, for example, a constitution for our new white republic, which you can find on at northwestfront.org. So I really would like for everybody to come check us out. Even if you decide that, you know, the Northwest Front is not necessarily a cup of tea, still the idea of white separatism, of a homeland of our own here on the North American continent, where we are the government, we are the army, we are the judges, we are the cops. It's all about political power. You can protest and you can bang on your computer keyboard and you can sign petitions for redress of grievances and you can go to little marches and you can pull levers in an election booth until the cows come home. And that's what we've been doing for the past century. And nothing has worked because we have no power. We have
to. Well, Harold, what I tell everybody on the show frequently is that there ain't no Superman, that everybody has to get involved. Everybody has to do something. Take some action. I don't care what it is. Take an action. There are ways to do this. And like I said, there's no Superman. Nobody's going to come save us. It's up to us to do it.
Whites are great for longing for that man on the white horse who will draw his saber and flourish it aloft and save us all while we applaud. And then we can flop back down on the TV and hit the remote and see what's on American Idol tonight and everything will be cool. And it's not going to work like that. As cliche as this sounds, our ancestors, our founding fathers, knew that freedom is something that has to be bought with blood and sweat and tears and suffering. And when a people becomes unwilling to pay that price for freedom, then they lose it. And so that is what my whole work is about. It's giving us a vision of possibility. My version of events, the Northwest American Republic, may not be the one that turns out to be correct, but I'm pretty sure it'll be something like that. At some point, the white man in this country is going to understand that he has to go it alone, that the only way for there to be anything saved at all for us or for anybody else in the world is that the white man has to separate from all these alien peoples and alien influences. We have to get our own habitat once again. We have to go back to living and thinking and working and building our lives only among our own people. And that's what the NAR will be for.
Well, Harold, any other comments or anything? Because I look at how dysfunctional, you know, you look at these failed federal programs. I mean, we have the war on drugs, more drugs than ever. We have the war on poverty. We have more poverty than ever. And in fact, we created this entirely dysfunctional welfare system that destroyed the black family and encourages black women to have more and more and more children out of wedlock. Mm-hmm. And if we do have a financial meltdown, which is what I think is the most likely, you know, there's going to be something's going to happen. I think the economic system is being rigged to fail, and it has been rigged to fail for some time. And when that happens and the balloon goes up or the S hits the fan, it's going to get really ugly really fast. And like you said, most of these third worlders are living in densely populated cities. Can you imagine what that's going to be like?
Maybe Mad Max isn't too far off. I mean, that could happen. Like I say, I don't think anybody's right mind wants it to happen. But with the skewed demographics and the incredibly screwed up infrastructure and economy, this continent, frankly, is overpopulated from a productive and logistic point of view because we can no longer really feed or maintain ourselves because we've got so much of the population eating the taxes and so few paying the taxes. And it's just almost like in the Middle Ages, the population of Europe had reached a point where current agricultural techniques couldn't really feed them all, and eventually nature intervened in the form of the Black Death. I really do believe that when human activity and human populations become so off kilter that they're messing up the whole planet, nature does tend to intervene. This is one reason why we see all this mess going on in Africa, this mass starvation. It's nature cleaning house because they can't feed themselves and they can't really do anything with themselves. And so nature's in essence writing them off, and that could well happen here. North America and the United States is not immune to the forces of history and to the forces of human nature and to the forces of sheer human incompetence that rule us. And I wish I could be a little bit more optimistic because I'm getting up to an age where I really don't want to have to go through all this in my 60s, but I may not have any choice in the matter. We are headed for a long, hard road here, one way or the other. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better.
Well, you know, Harold, I hate to agree with you on that, but I think it is. But in a way, part of me looks forward to some sort of a crash, some sort of an event, because then we can rebuild this thing the right way from the ground up.
Well, let's hope.
Well, Harold, thank you so much. I hear our music coming in the background. I want to thank you for being a guest again. I'll give you a call in you know, several weeks. We'll have you back on.
Okay, looking forward to it.
All right, Harold, be well. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, folks, so like I said earlier, my guest on Wednesday will be Susan Lindauer, and I really recommend you listen to her. This will be a good interview. And then on Thursday, it'll be Jim Dean, managing editor of Veterans Today, and he's got some good work out that we need to share. Be back tomorrow. Talk to you all then. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I want the world to the dark side of the moon. After all,